Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report. Once again, at home, just briefly, consider it like a vacation or something like that. But it is a Friday. We've got some big stories to talk about, and we're very lucky to be joined on the show by an awesome guest, Giuseppe Trombetta. Welcome to the show.
Don't be so anti-Italian, Gian Iadarola. You already changed the pronunciation of your name from the original Iadarola.
It did often sound like you were being stabbed in the middle.
Oh, the problem is you can't do an Italian accent with a cigarette in your mouth because your mouth needs to be much more open.
Brett, I'm a little bit worried that you are becoming pizza. I think you need to dial back the Italian just a little bit. Put down the cannoli.
Here's something I was promised when I went to Italy.
What's
is that? I would not gain weight because of the two things in my hands right now. And that's all the true. Walking to museums. But I didn't go to museums. I went to the museums of restaurants that serve cannolis and arancine. And as a result, my friend, I gained 15 pounds in 2 weeks.
No, you did not. No, you did not.
I gained 15 pounds. When I got home, I weighed myself. Never in my life, John, have I been over 200 pounds. I was 207. Since returning home, I've lost 8 pounds, which means I probably just didn't do enough, which means these are a lie.
I don't like where this is going. First of all, I've never in my life weighed more than 200 pounds. Get off my show.
John, okay? Not all of us can grow muscle mass like you, sir. Some of us have been bean poles our entire lives. I was 6 feet, 135 when I graduated college.
Yeah.
I gained 70 pounds since then, dude. And it's just because I learned how to enjoy myself by eating my food as fast as possible. And you know what?
I do that too.
I don't regret it.
Okay, so we like, I'm seeing from the chat, we like the chain. You're gonna need to get 3 or 4 more of those.
I had to. I thought it was too much.
You are Italian, but bear in mind, you're now Italian in America. So we're gonna need a tracksuit. And people have christened you Ehrlich the Hut.
There you go. I did almost eat myself to death. Do you want to do a show today, John?
Glad to have you. I'm sure people listening to this are like, wait, it said this was political. What's going on? No, we're going to talk about Rings of Power. I'm kidding. We're going to do the news. Don't worry about it. We got a lot to talk about, honestly. In just a moment, we're going to be jumping into the ever-evolving Giuliani legal situation. We're going to give you some updates on what's going on with the protests in Russia, as well as the call up of hundreds of thousands of additional troops. Iran as well, of course, those protests continue. We've got developments when it comes to the classified documents. Herschel Walker, is he now stealing his backstory from civil rights heroes? We're going to debate that. And then in the extended show, in the aftermath, we've got garbage to throw away. And I've got a choose your own adventure garbage person. I know that the video I'm going to show you is of them being garbage, but you all are going to have to debate one of two reasons it's garbage. That's going to be a lot of fun. In advance of that, you can hit the like button, share the stream so the people know we're live. And if you want to communicate with Brett or I, you can send us messages and we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Brett, you ready to start the show?
Technically, it's Brett or me, but continue.
You won me back with that. Some of us can't put on muscle, and I was like, no, oh, I do like Brett. I hate you again, so that's great. Okay, well, that's the mood, the vibe as we launch into our stories. Okay, so let's jump into this. Do you remember this? Take a look at this video. Now, what you're seeing here is an altercation that happened in a supermarket, and there's Rudy Giuliani, former lawyer to the former president, being viciously assaulted by someone that at first glance you probably assume must be Stone Cold Steve Austin because of the technique and the force that went into that blow. But that was a guy, of course, slapping Rudy Giuliani on the back. Now, he described it initially before that video was available as if, quote, a boulder hit me. He had just been watching Indiana Jones, methinks. Anyway, video showing him being backslapped, he later said, is a little deceptive. Without any warning, I was hit very, very hard on the back to such an extent that it knocked me back about 2 steps. And honestly, it is a feat to slap someone lightly on the back and that makes them fall back multiple feet. I don't know exactly how that works, but I haven't studied Jeet Kune Do, and apparently this guy did. So he wanted charges pressed, and the charges were initially this guy Gil, the one in the video, was charged with a felony, spent over 24 hours in jail for what you saw in that video, but his charges were reduced to a misdemeanor after the video was actually made available. And that contradicted accounts that Giuliani was making and the cops who agreed with him, I guess, or believed his story. And so that was months ago. And those charges have been preceding the legal developments. Now, flash forward to this week, and this is Daniel Gill, grocery store worker. His charges are gonna be dismissed and sealed in 6 months. He's not gonna have to admit any guilt as long as he commits no other legal infractions in that time. So he can't like suplex Steve Bannon. He can't do a Herc and Ron on Stephen Miller. No more gymnastic assaults on former Trump henchmen. Brett, what do you think?
What a miscarriage of justice, John. Rudy Giuliani annihilated organized crime in New York City, and he deserves our respect. He did something with turnstiles and abortion that made New York safe or something. I don't know. I don't read actual science. I just skim the Amazon's summaries of Malcolm Gladwell books.
But that's probably enough.
This is amazing. I love that, like, all the face saving that's going on here. Like, they're like, well, don't do anything else bad, even though, and that's just a way for them not to say that what he did originally was just literally patting the guy on the back. But Rudy Giuliani has become a thorough joke among most people in America, and everyone else who doesn't think he's a joke is just pretending. And if you read a story like this, like what the original video that we just saw came out and it was released by the New York Post, who got their hands on it. If you read the original article, it makes it seem like Rudy Giuliani was indeed slapped on the back. And they recount his tale where he's like, this guy raged on after assaulting essentially Rudy Giuliani. And that just is an indicator of how far gone most people in political media are, that they're telling you things that your eyes do not corroborate. And they expect you to go along with it because they believe that they are so successful in their tribalization of American politics that they don't need reality anymore.
Well, and I think that they're probably onto something. I mean, they know that most people have effectively become like, you know, New York City horses. They have one blinder is Fox News, the other is Truth Social. And so like they don't have to deny the sites because they never see the sites. But anyway, and look, by the way, charges are now, they're gotten rid of. That's a good thing, I think. You can still say, don't slap someone on the back. Like even if you agree that this is not an assault, like calm down, Giuliani, stop taking your, I guess your life lessons from Michael Tracy or something, pretending that it bumps into you. Like as someone in the chat said, did the Doctor Strange punch and knocked your spirit out of your body? Like come on, buddy. But that said, you can still say, don't slap someone on the back. Like I don't want some random conservative slap Bernie on the back. I don't want literally anyone to touch AOC, like because like, oh, I didn't hit her. Well, don't touch him. You can say that, but you also have to say he wasn't annihilated. It wasn't a finishing move. You don't have to get over here. It was just a slap on the back.
Yeah, it just means that Giuliani is not a tough guy like he has pretended to be for the last 15 years.
Yeah, 100%. That's what it is. Now, Mr. Gill's lawyer says he's owed $2 million in damages for the fallout of it. He says the publicity caused him to lose his job and embarrassed him before friends and colleagues. I can't, you know, attest to any of that. I honestly think that literally everyone I know would think that I was a total badass if I was involved in this. But he does say that he was fired from his job and now makes less money. So it is possible that considering he did nothing wrong, and the legal thing about it is what caused him to lose money, I think he probably is owed some money. It's gonna be up to the judge whether it's $2 million or not, but he is probably owed money, I think.
I mean, he chose to get into that. This is the part that I really have no answer for. And I think it's literally the only interesting part about stories like this and something that we do need to face, which is what is the fallout of some getting caught up in a scandal like this? Because he voluntarily went in there, he did touch the guy. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't go up and touch politicians. It's very strange unless they invite you to do so. They're in many ways like strippers. they simulate caring about you for money. So I get it. But you can't touch them unless they invite it. But yeah, I just think that this entire thing is more interesting when we focus on what are the ramifications. There was that woman who sued her employer after she was fired in the wake of calling the police on a black man who was bird watching in Central Park. Yep. And that's really the only interesting thing to me. I think that if you are just so happy to get caught up in something like this, you are owed the monetary damages as a result of any legal action that was taken against you. But other than that, I think it's just really, really stupid. And the only person we should be laughing at is really Rudy Giuliani.
Don't worry, I'm doing that. And of course, you know, when we have whatever the damages might be, we'll be talking about it on the show. So stay tuned. Subscribe if you haven't. Why don't we cast our eyes abroad, and whenever we're ready, we can jump into this next video.
Игрушки закончились. Вы все военные. Три дня здесь, борт. Две недели до подготовки. Долго. С работы вас никто не уволит. У вас работа все зарезервировано. Ваше рабочее место.
So if you're wondering how Vladimir Putin's new draft is going, not well, seemingly, when you have to shout down a group of people who really don't seem that they want to participate in this special military operation. That's probably not great. The second detail that makes it not so great is, bearing in mind that I do not speak Russian, people commenting on that video and it was posted online said that it is actually mistranslated in the subtitles, that the 2 weeks until training, which seems a little bit weird, why are they holding them for weeks before training, is actually a mistranslation, and it is 2 weeks of training, which probably not enough, particularly when you're entering into a war where clearly your side has not been nearly as prepared as we were led to believe that they would be. So people who don't want to go there, being forced to go there and given minimal training before going there, not a great idea. Now, they did reassure them, your job will be waiting for you, which I guess technically might be true, but bear in mind, thousands and thousands, at least admitted by Russian soldiers, have died, let alone the external count, which puts it at the potentially tens of thousands. A lot of people will not be returning for their jobs, including likely some of the people in that room in the video that you just watched. And by the way, when I refer to it as a draft, some apologists for Putin might say, no, it's not a draft, it's a limited thing. Turns out, that was a massive lie, and we're gonna get into the details about that. But Brett, what do you think?
Right, that dynamic that you're alluding to is just this selective choosing of people you believe that has no consistency in terms of your rubric for trusting someone. There's so many people who are like, I just wanna be a contrarian. It seems like everybody's on the side of like, don't invade Ukraine. I'm gonna find some stupid reason why it's okay to do so. And just believe Putin, who is basically doing the same thing we did in Vietnam, which is like, I'm just gonna fight this war that wasn't really provoked in any tangible way. Now, obviously there's differences between the two, but that's the sentiment. And Russians understand this because they threw tons and tons of lives in Afghanistan and failed. And the worst part is, like, a lot of these people, according to the original claims by the Russian government, are former military and have some kind of combat experience. Now, that is a very tenuous, a very vague definition by all accounts. And so there's a lot of people brought up back up into this, but it just yields moments like that where, like, you're all military now. You're all going to fight in Ukraine. I don't want to spend much time explaining that only like half the people really are kind of okay with this, and the rest are like, I will get in trouble if I say no. But it's just a ridiculous, like, I dub the whole idea of a draft is I dub the soldier now. It's just so bad.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we have to talk about this is we have to keep track of where sort of the goalposts sort of have gone. This was initially, remember, supposed to be a conflict. It was gonna be awesome for Russia. It was gonna be over super soon. It was gonna reestablish them on the global stage. And no one in Russia would ever have to suffer really, and in particular, they'd never really know what was happening over there, not the actual facts. It would all be filtered. Well, that has, it's moved pretty far so far throughout this year. Now more and more people are being forcibly taken away and forced to participate in this. And when you send 300,000 additional soldiers, maintaining the fiction that it's a special military operation and not the largest draft and the largest invasion that Russia has been involved in many decades is going to be pretty difficult to do, particularly as more and more stories like this start to get out. So a 26-year-old PhD student and lecturer at a prominent Russian university told the BBC, two men turned up at his house to draft him, despite the fact that he's a student and they are supposed to not be forced to participate in this. More importantly, maybe, he has no military experience. He is not one of these people that previously has served and is being called back up. So that has proven to not be true, both parts of that. A 63-year-old man was drafted as part of the mobilization. He has second degree diabetes and a brain condition known as cerebral ischemia. He was tested by doctors and deemed fit to serve. Maybe he's a badass 63-year-old, I don't know. Doesn't sound like he should be sent there. One Muscovite who was detained with her husband at the protests earlier this week said that male protesters were given draft papers at the police station. Quote, there was a military recruiting officer who gave them the detained men draft notifications. When the first person was asked to go to a separate room, we didn't understand what was going on. But when he returned with a draft slip, we just started crying. This group, OVD Info, it's a monitoring group that watches what happens with protests and protesters, say that this has happened at least 15 different police stations. And Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov, we talked about yesterday, his son was pranked by Russian YouTubers and on the phone said that he wasn't gonna go. He says that the practice of issuing draft orders inside police stations was not against the law, I guess. The idea that you're just taking random protesters and now punishing them by forcing them to be sent to Ukraine where they very well might die, that seems like it should be against the law. Also, a 17-year-old boy was conscripted. He was at an anti-war protest. You're not supposed to be able to be conscripted unless you were 18, but they decided, well, he was at a protest, so screw him, he's going. And so many of these things that they said were true of this mobilization have been proven almost instantaneously to not be founded in fact whatsoever.
I love that. That's who you want to send, people who don't want to go there. That's a really good thing, especially when the main criticism of your entire fighting force, and part of this is probably cherry pick, but looking at the results over time, it doesn't seem like it's too far from possible, is incompetent and not as well trained as you would want your, if you're putting yourself back on the world stage, not as well trained as you want your fighting force to be. But the through line here is that if you are against imperialistic wars of people in the military trying to profit, or people who run the militaries trying to profit or just establish the size of their members, and you need to be opposed to it when the Americans do it and when the Russians do it too. You can't just suddenly decide that it's totally cool. I read something about Nazis somewhere in Eastern Ukraine and that justify all of Southern Ukraine getting occupied, and lo and behold, it has a ton of coastline and it's strategically beneficial. That is exactly the DNA of imperialism, and you need to be against it when Vladimir Putin does it, even if you have a giant raging boner for him.
Perhaps especially then. Why don't we turn to another big international situation? A reporter tried to get a statement from an Iranian foreign ministry official in New York, and take a look at how that worked. So there you have the official not wanting to go on the record, not wanting to even be pictured on the record, fleeing as he desperately tries to cover his head, which I'm fine with. You'll notice that he as a man gets to choose whether he covers his head though, bit ironic. Anyway, the protests have continued. At least 17 people have died. That's according to some reports, two members of Iran's paramilitary group as well. If you listen to the Iranian regime, they say that far more of their side have been killed. Who only knows? But the uprisings, if in case you're just checking into the story now, were triggered by the death of Mahsa Amini, a Kurdish-Iranian woman who was arrested for allegedly breaking Iran's strict rules on wearing the hijab, the Islamic head covering for women. She died while in police custody, reportedly suffering multiple blows to the head. And as of right now, similar to in Russia, people are protesting. And similar to in Russia, they're doing so with incredible bravery, knowing that they might not come back. And in this case, reports are showing that, in fact, some are not. You have this reporting, I believe it's coming from CNN, about some family members saying that they haven't seen their family members in literally days. One 22-year-old named Farnaz, that's an anonymous name, you can't actually give your real name because you might be hunted down by the Iranian regime as well, says he called me and said only one sentence: I was caught. I immediately understood what my dear brother meant and went to the morality police department to look for him. It's been over 4 days since she's seen her brother, and she's worried he's never coming home. And perhaps he will. I hope that he will. But the idea that you could be picked up at a protest and a family member needs to go to the morality police department sounds like, it sounds like a short story that I would write. It doesn't sound like something that should exist in the real world. We should live in a world of reason, not a sci-fi dystopia. Brett, what do you think?
I love that it's called the morality police, and there is a certain implication of morality when you have a police force together. But when you start calling it the morality police, then you kind of inch into hyperbole and lose the ability for people to believe that you're actually represent good morals. I do love that this guy's running away, and I think they should do mandatory hijabs for people in power in Iran so that they can have the opportunity to. I love the irony there. You're absolutely right. But you know, this is why I don't like fundamentalism, and that's difficult to, I mean, that's easy to say, but when you get to, like, when you want to solve all the problems in the world and you have one universal unifying idea on how to do it, you like most fundamentalists think you're doing good, but you're actually a psychopath. I think that's a problem. And that's why my working framework for approaching problems in America is progressivism. And progressivism is boiled down most easily into laying down reasonable ground rules so people don't have the worst time possible. And you want to protect them from that. And that's it. And the ground rules that they've set down in Iran is you have to cover your head. If you're a woman, you don't get to have a say in there, or you're going to get beaten to death by the morality police, who, it's so transparent, are just upholding dudes in charge culture. And even though they say they're behind some kind of Islamic belief and truth that they know to be moral at its core, as in any dictatorial culture or regime, they're just taking advantage of a lot of coverage that kind of purported ethos provides for them in order to be corrupt and take total control. And when the only power that people have is to stand up and protest, regardless of the risks that they incur of bodily and mortal harm, they need to do so. And that's what we're seeing. And it's inspiring everybody.
100%. Yeah. And so the protests continue, more and more people dying, more and more people being hauled away. There are also, by the way, pro-government rallies that we are told are spontaneous. And that might even be true. There are some people who will like this. Like, you know, when these absolute horrendous fundamentalist clowns and radicals in the US do stuff, some people cheer for it. That's definitely true. By the way, they chanted at these against America and Israel, because according to state media, according to the regime, those are the places that the social unrest is coming from. Kind of reminds me of, like, and they say this, by the way, they say this literally every time there's protests. It seems like when someone says that all their exes have been crazy, like at a certain point, you start to question, like, maybe it's not America and Israel. Maybe it's you. Like, maybe they just don't like you, Iran. Maybe they don't want, like, your fundamentalism in charge. Maybe these people want to be free. Maybe they want to be able to protest. Maybe they want to be able to cut their hair. Have you considered that? It seems pretty reasonable when you stop and think about it for a microsecond. And unfortunately, like, I know that we've gotten some videos out of Iran of them saying they want people to be focused on this, talking about it. And so we should. Difficult to know exactly what we can accomplish, and it is also made more difficult by the fact that they won't see this. The internet has been cut off. You can't use WhatsApp or TikTok or Instagram or Twitter or anything like that. So, you know, God only knows when that will be resumed, but I hope in some way they know they're the people who are risking you know, imprisonment or worse, I hope that they know that they do have a lot of people around the globe who are supporting them.
And I think the reason that you put Iran and Russia in the same segment back to back is because these are people who I think are overextending themselves. I think they're playing their hand too hard. You've got Vladimir Putin who wants to solidify some kind of crazy legacy and he's going too hard. He thinks he has the people behind him and he does not. And the morality piece in Iran, or the morality police, the regime in Iran thinks they have the backing of the people. This is a at one time quite secular society, or quite like Western okayed society through a very like rough relationship with the United States, but still they didn't always wear hijabs in Tehran. And now they do. And I think, I think everyone's better served if they join the international community by not being so psychopathic.
100%. Well, with that said, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, more developments when it comes to the classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago. We'll give you all that and more after this. Okay, so there was this comment from Bay Photo who says, Brett, if you're unhappy with your vacation weight, just get Ronnie Jackson to perform a physical. You too can weigh whatever you want.
So silly.
Brett's in the best physical shape anyone has ever seen. He's being considered for a role in the MCU. Anyway, with that said, let's jump back to some more important news. The special master hits against Trump and his legal defense of the classified document scale just keep coming. Now, Raymond Deary is ordering the Trump team to back up any claims of the FBI planting evidence. Because it turns out you can't just say that on Truth Social. Some point you have to be specific. Raymond Deary said in a filing just yesterday that Trump's team needs to submit a sworn declaration saying if they believe the Justice Department included any items on their inventory of materials taken from Mar-a-Lago that were not actually seized during the search. The declaration must include a quote list of any specific items set forth in the detailed property inventory that plaintiff asserts were not seized from the premises. So if you're going to imply that it happened, you have to be specific. First of all, specifically say in court that they did it. That's first level. Second level is tell us what on that list you didn't have. Because if they planted something, they planted specific things, what are they? And so this has now come up as an issue because Trump himself, some of his attorneys, and several outside Republican allies have been publicly claiming that this happened. Remember, early on, they were talking about before we knew what was found, immediately every Republican was like, they're probably going to plant. And then once we found out, most of that was dialed back, but some still claim that things had been planted. So this is a gauntlet being thrown down by the special master, very similar to the gauntlet earlier this week over the declassification. You can't just keep vaguely implying you did something. This is a court of law. You have to actually claim it. And that is an important distinction because there are consequences if you lie at a court. There's no consequences for lying on Truth Social except maybe more retruths. I don't know. But the question is going to be, will any of Trump's lawyers want to go on the record, put potentially their ability to practice law on the line to make claims that they know aren't true? Brett, what do you think?
So yeah, this is the court and truth matters. That's the problem. That's the problem for Trump is that the truth at some point has to matter. Now, how do we make that happen? What we try to do is funnel what he's doing that is sketchy toward the place where truth has a chance to matter. And that place where it has a chance to matter is in various kinds of courts, right? So you have a criminal court where you could go to jail. You got a civil court where you could have to pay a lot of people a lot of money. Now, in a criminal court, usually the consequence you pay is that you do get incarcerated. And that's how we say, no, this really happened. And you really have to suffer the consequences. The problem with that is there end up being appeals. And all Trump has tried to do, and to a large extent, the Democrats have tried to do at certain points, but everyone in politics at least tries to do it, is pack courts and make it so that eventually there is an outlet for your side to win. Not by being right, not by doing the thing that is truthful, and not by having an actual moral, ethical, and legal high ground, but by rather through wanton corruption. By taking advantage of the mechanisms we had to put in place to at least give the truth and fairness a good shot at happening, and then just bastardize the whole process. So now Trump has his Supreme Court through a lot of terrible angling. So if this criminal court case gets appealed and appealed and appealed, theoretically he could win. The only outlet that we have for making him actually face consequences is stuff that I'm encouraged to see bearing out. Like various people that Trump himself has appointed have gone and said, no, this is a ridiculous legal claim and you have to put your money where your mouth is, including his special master of keys or whatever that he through an appointee convinced someone to allow to be put in place.
I think you're thinking of the gatekeeper and the key master who have not yet combined in an unholy union to allow for Gozer to cross over to that might come up later on. We won't know until all the documents have been reviewed, and that might actually come pretty soon. So everyone stay tuned. A couple other interesting developments, including, I probably should have previewed this earlier in the show. This is really exciting, maybe. Deary opened the door yesterday to holding a hearing where, quote, witnesses with knowledge of the relevant facts can be called to testify. That feels like we might get something almost close to an actual court case. Like, now, we're not gonna get live video or anything like that, but already from the hearings that have been held, we've gotten a lot of details out. And wouldn't you love to hear more from maybe some of the actual agents who did the searching about the nature of the materials, where they found them? What were there any stacked neatly on top of the toilet? I don't know, but we might find out soon. And that's pretty exciting. Additionally, and this maybe plays into Raymond Deary saying that the timeline for finishing the review of the documents could be literally just a couple of weeks from now rather than the end of November. He's also asking for help from a retired federal judge, James Orenstein. He wants to help him, retired federal magistrate judge who holds a top secret clearance and who has experience with complex cases, reviewing documents for attorney-client privilege, and serving as an appointed aide on the FISA court, similar to, in this case, Deary's experience there. Orenstein, by the way, and this is a great detail, would be paid $500 per hour, which of course Trump would be paying. That is, man, those documents do sound really boring. That work sounds boring, but $500 an hour, Brett? I don't know. I think I might go work for the FISA court. What do you think?
You don't make that job? The little work you put in, that's what I make, dude. Because I don't work. I just sit here and I do work. It's being away from it's great.
Can I make your work a little bit easier for just one moment? Because I looked ahead in this block and saw something that I didn't put there.
Oh, so that I found the documents?
You found the documents.
I Where'd found out them? Where they were. I don't know if you've seen graphic 8 yet. Here's what happened. Look at the bulge in his butt zone. I've seen a lot of butts. Sometimes when I'm like falling asleep, I just Google the word butts. I had a whole, when they first launched something, I had like the Periscope stream called Put Your Butt on Stuff, put butts on your Instagram. And if you look at that, here's what happened. He was in Mar-a-Lago doing some reading on the toilet with his classified documents. And he said, oh my God, the FBI's here. And then you just heard crunching noises and pant stuffing. It's in his pants. All those documents are on his haunches. What a weird body to have. Someone posted that. I'm not going to body shame. Honestly, I think the whole classified document scandal is so stupid. And it is very transparently just trying to keep Trump being an idiot in the news through the midterm elections. I don't see huge, massive consequences for what he did. I don't think it's going to really bear out to be anything. Hold on, wait.
You don't see the consequences is one thing. Do you think there should be consequences, or you don't care and you don't think there will be?
It's one of those things you see like articles where it's like, oh my gosh, he was held in contempt of court for not appearing for a subpoena. And he has to spend 4 minutes answering emails. Like that's what this is gonna be. It's like, yeah, the president of the United States is no longer president and he took like 100 documents home with him. Now, if they can prove that he was selling secrets to the Saudis, that is a huge thing. But odds are he just is a dork who wanted stuff for his presidential library. But if he's trying to hide evidence and it incriminates him, then there's that.
Yeah, well, so he definitely obstructed the search into them. So look, even if you think that it's totally cool to take all the documents, which I don't, and I also, by the way, don't think that he was selling them. Like I'm more in the middle on this. He was asked to return them and he lied to the DOJ about it. Like this is now crimes on top of crimes, but.
Right, and my analysis is that just heightens the stupidity of the entire thing.
Yes, maybe considering how stupid it is, the only next step is to stuff the back of his pants with a bunch of documents. And it's a ridiculous theory to say that they're documents, but it makes more sense than anything else because the right angles on display in that photo cannot be explained. Mm-mm. They simply cannot. We need to turn to something arguably stupider, Brett. So prepare yourself. Let's talk about this. Is Herschel Walker stealing his backstory, literally stealing anecdotes from civil rights legends? Well, we don't know for sure, but there is some evidence and we're gonna dive into it. So you need to understand that back in 2020, 2021, Herschel Walker has repeatedly in public appearances and interviews shared several versions of a story about an encounter that he supposedly had with a former member of the Ku Klux Klan that seems suspiciously similar to a story that has been told for many years by late former Georgia Representative John Lewis. So here is what Herschel Walker is saying happened. On June 2nd, 2020, he was on the Big and Rick show. Let's pause for a second on that. The Big and Rick show, which sounds like Rick Strom's next project, actually. But anyway, as a guest and told viewers that an ex-Klansman approached him following a college football game while he was a freshman at the University of Georgia. Walker claimed the former white supremacist said to him, "Herschel, I was one of the biggest Klansmen here in the state of Georgia, but I wanted to tell you I'm sorry. You changed my way of thinking." Bear in mind, this is not a claim that he changed the Ku Klux Klan member's way of thinking as a candidate. He's saying this happened back when he was a college football player. So apparently something about his moves on the field changed the Klan member's thoughts. Okay. Well, that was in 2020, the first time anyone can find of him on the record actually saying this. Now, what's interesting is that that story happened the same year that one of the times that Congressman John Lewis's story came out about how when he forgave a Ku Klux Klan member who had beaten him in the 1960s. And so here's the details on that. Andrew Aidens, a former digital director and policy advisor to Congressman Lewis, said this is back in 2009 initially. Elwin Wilson, a former Ku Klux Klan member, apologized to Lewis for physically assaulting him while he served as a freedom rider in 1961. They then, to prove that this actually happened in their case, appeared on an episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2011 to share their story about how Lewis's nonviolent actions as a member of the civil rights movement toward Wilson changed his mind and inspired him to stop participating in racist acts. And interestingly, in some of Herschel Walker's earlier books, he never makes a claim about this. It seems like a pretty big thing that you'd bring up. That said, Brett, we can't know for sure. Are we being unreasonable? Could this have happened to two different people? Is it just a coincidence that the story sounds similar?
Herschel Walker, without this story being factored in to your decision of whether or not to vote for him, is about as worthy of becoming a senator as wet toilet paper left out on your lawn after someone TP's your house and it's like all like in your trees. Like that is Herschel Walker's intellect. At this point, it is an insult to America as a country, as an institution, and as an idea that one of the major parties in American politics thinks that this football pad with batteries to make it walk around should be a senator for the great state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And to this story, there is no way in holy hell that any idea that Herschel Walker has put forward has changed anyone's minds. It is an insult that they think they can get away with putting this something someone like this in front. And it is a testament to the corruption of our two-party system as it stands now that he might have a shot
some rough stuff in there, Brett. But yeah, no, I agree. And honestly, let's say that he did it. He stole the anecdote. Okay, so now let's put that into the ranking of disqualifying things that Herschel Walker has said and done. It's in the 40s, I think, maybe 50s. Like someone reminded me in the chat, he said China stole our good air. He held a gun to former partners of his head and threatened to kill them. He told a story about him driving to go murder a person, but Jesus intervened. There's a lot of bad stuff, and it's still a shockingly close race. I will remind you of that.
When I was in high school, I did this thing called Junior Statesman of America. When I was in high school, I did this thing called Junior Statesman of America, and you all get together and then you go up against someone in a debate. And the truth is, you win your gavel for best speaker if you have the most people in the room, not if you make good arguments. And that's what this has become. This is just packing the Senate with meat. In this case, not much more than just barely sentient pink sludge meat in Herschel Walker so they can get their way with their horrible ideas.
You are a man of the metaphors today. Anyway, with all that said, we do have to go to our break. We come back, we're gonna play a video for you where someone says something you probably will agree with, but you will be very angry about who it is that's saying it. You'll see after this. To continue, May Money said in a super chat during the break, at work, I sent out a $120 signed Trump Art of the Comeback book to Texas. Womp womp, grifter's gonna grift. I need some more information about, wait, why did you send this out? What is going on with this book? That is crazy. But thank you for the message. Okay, Blue Lizard Guts has been here for 25 months. Nice. Okay.
Oh, wow, that's good.
With all that said, we've got a couple quick stories to get to. Let's jump immediately into this.
CNN would love to put you on a news to make us look like shit. And if the cops wasn't here, I would fight every one of these right now. Every one of you. Believe me, I would. I don't care if I got my ass whooped. I would knock the out of one of y'all. I swear to God, I would.
Don't take it. They're racist.
They're white supremacists.
They're white supremacists. You hate blacks. You hate Mexicans. Take it from them. They're white supremacist patriots. You need toilet paper? Take it from them.
We are so sick of you guys making real Americans that like Trump and like patriotism bad. We're sick of it.
This is a difficult one. I don't know that individual. I don't know what he believes. I know that he's wearing about as much red as a person can, although notably not wearing the red MAGA hat, which is an interesting choice. Has the Punisher skull on his shirt, so that says something, but he really doesn't like the KKK. And he's specific. He seems to not just think that the KKK is making other Trump supporters look bad, but he seems to generally hate their racism, hate their white supremacy, and think that it is a different thing than the patriotism of actual MAGA supporters. And so, not knowing what he believes about a number of different topics, I do like his passionate taunting of the KKK, his willingness, in his own words, to fight and even be beat up by the KKK to demonstrate how much he hates white supremacy. Brett, this is a weird one. What do you think?
I love this because you can see everyone just salivating over this on the right. This is just like a clip that I'm certain every racist person that likes Donald Trump who just doesn't own the hood is gonna say, see, that's us, that's MAGA. Nothing we do is racist. We're not in the KKK, so we are not racist. But A, you're looking next to yourself at the rally and it's like a bunch of Klans people. And if like you're at a party with Nazis, you might wanna wonder what this party's all about. You know, this is the kind of person I do want to have a longer conversation with to be like, all right, so break it down for me. Yeah. I know why you're here. I know why you're saying it. And I know that this is you trying to make a counter argument to stuff that I have a lot of evidence for about the people who support Trump as a whole. So what's the rest of it? I just love it's like when you see a rat fight a cockroach, you're just like, this is strange.
Yes. Who's the good guy in that fight? I don't know. I guess the rat. I don't know. It's a mammal. I don't know. Like, I would love to really dig into not just him, but also the other people on his side what they actually think about like topics of race. Like he's shouting out like KKK, and I felt like the people behind him were like, yeah, they are bad. And then he's like, because they're racist. And I feel like some of the people behind him were like, well, you know, that's not.
Well, they just see an opportunity to say that they're not racist. People love that opportunity, even if the rest of what they say is inherently racist. Like, tell me about your immigration. The thing is,
I agree. They will use this to, you know, other people will use this to cloak their own racism. And yet I do want Trump supporters yelling at the KKK. I do. So that's the difficult position. I like parts of this. I don't like a lot of the implications necessarily. And I would ask everyone on the good side of that line, why do you think the KKK loves Trump so much? I mean, you're not like them. I get that. But why do you think they love Donald Trump? What is it about what he's saying and doing that makes them love him so much? I think that would be an interesting conversation. Now, that said, we do need to go to people say show's too negative. We need to get positive. Let's get positive. Let's launch into this.
What Bread and Roses means to me, and by the way, this came out of the suffragette movement, the fight for women's right to vote, is that in a sense, bread means economic justice. It means all of us are entitled to healthcare, to education, to decent housing, to decent wages. But life is more than that. And the roses aspect is we're entitled to beauty. We're entitled to culture. We're entitled to expanding our mind and education. And we're entitled to a life, not just of drudgery of having to go to work to make a living. And so I think that's what that song is about to me, and a very beautiful one indeed.
I love that from Bernie Sanders, talking about how, yes, we do need to fight for economic dignity, for opportunity, but that life is not just about having a better, like, sort of working condition. Life is about more than that. What the economic side is the prerequisite, that's the bare minimum, that's so that you can live. But life is supposed to be about more than that. And I love that he's invoking that and talking about this concept of bread and roses, which, you know, Joan Baez had a song about, there was a poem about. It's originally traced all the way back to 1910. Helen Todd, women's rights activist. I just want to read a couple of the early invocations of this. Helen Todd said, they're literally fighting for the right to vote. Not at once, but woman is the mothering element in the world, and her vote will go towards helping forward the time when life's bread, which is home, shelter, and security, and the roses of life, music, education, nature, and books shall be the heritage of every child that is born in the country, in the government of which she has a voice. And it was echoed by many other people in the movement in the subsequent years, including Rose Schneiderman, Women's Trade Union League member in 1912, who said, "What the woman who labors wants is the right to live, not simply exist. The right to life as the rich woman has the right to life, and the sun and music and art. You have nothing that the humblest worker has not a right to have also. The worker must have bread, but she must have roses too. Help, you women of privilege, give her the ballot to fight with." And I love that so much, Brett. What do you think?
I mean, I fundamentally disagree with Bernie's framing with the word decent. I'd use the word fair instead, and that's my thing. You're not entitled to decent housing, you're not entitled to decent healthcare, you're entitled to fair wages, fair healthcare. Because decent means if your entire economy tanks and you can't provide that stuff, like, who's gonna provide it? Fair is the only framework that you can do it. But I do understand and appreciate.
I think he'd be fine with the word fair, I assume.
Yeah. Justice is fairness. I just think that at the end of it, this is a great way to look at the world. And, you know, you can find your own roses. You got to be able to find your own roses. And a system cannot deny you bread through corruption. And I think that's my framework for approaching all of this.
Yeah, it's a reminder to me too that, like, there is a cost to keeping people in destitution here in the US and internationally. Someone once said, "I'm less interested in discussing the weight of Einstein's brain than I am thinking about the certainty that other Einsteins have lived and died unable to learn, unable to teach, because they were born in the wrong place." And you can apply that to science, you can apply that to art as well. In lifting up people, we will produce for everyone a better world across all of these areas. Anyway, that's all the time we have for our first hour. Thank you everyone on the podcast and the linear platforms. If you're listening on Twitch or YouTube or the members app, any of those other platforms, there's a lot more to come, including the ceremonial throwing away of our garbage people of the week. So don't go anywhere. Brett and I will be back in just a few minutes.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.